Welcome everyone to the Score Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Boone, the lead fantasy analyst at the Score. Appreciate you hanging out with us today. And if you've been listening to the show for the last couple of years, you know what I like to do in January and early February. I get those early rankings out for the next season. Of course, I love working on the Dynasty Trade Value Charts, the rookie rankings, all that stuff. But I also want to help you get ready for what's to come in the offseason. And yes, we still have the Super Bowl left to go. We're not overlooking that. But free agency is going to be here before you know it in March. So today, we've got Brad Spielberger from Pro Football Focus here to help us go over all the top free agents and maybe what we might see happen when the league calendar rolls over come March. And he's got lots of content coming out over at PFF, including his top 150 free agents list. And that's across all positions, both sides of the ball. He's got an article out right now. It's one player every team can't afford to lose in free agency. And then today, he dropped a post on potential landing spots for free agent quarterbacks and free agent receivers. So he is really dominating the free agent landscape right now. That's why we had him on last year around this time. That's why we're happy that he's joining us again today. So Brad, welcome back to the show, man. How you been, dude? How are things going here as we gear up for Super Bowl and then obviously for the offseason?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Yeah, I've been in the free agency cave. I started that around November. I'm watching film, looking at the data, comparing to historical outcomes, all sorts of different things to build that board out. So it's fun. It's enjoyable. It's kind of like, you know, big boards for college guys where they just go into a hole for a stretch of time. But, you know, on the other side of the tunnel now, heading to Vegas for that Super Bowl, not the actual game, but, you know, so some media stuff the week before. So looking forward to that for sure.
All right. Well, we're going to talk a bunch about free agency and mainly the offensive free agents, the ones that are going to have the biggest effect in the fantasy world. And we'll get to that in a minute. What I want to start with, though, is just getting your thoughts on the coaching hires that we've seen so far. And I'm not going to make you talk about all of them, but who's your favorite of these new coaching hires that we've seen from the last few weeks? Or even, I would accept if you want to mention even the coordinators, some of these offensive coordinators that stayed in place, like Ben Johnson with the Lions and Bobby Slowick with the Texans. I thought that was quite a surprise that those guys didn't end up taking jobs and actually stayed with their current team. So you can go in any direction you want here. Which new coaching hire did you like the most?
Yeah, we'll touch on a couple real quick. So, you know, the one that happened about 10 minutes before you and I just hopped on this podcast. Yeah, and that is, for folks that don't know when this is being made, that was Mike McDonald, the Baltimore Ravens defensive coordinator, who is now the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks. Youngest head coach in the NFL. He's 36. I had a chance to meet him once. He, in a very funny way, is a perfect Pete Carroll replacement, not only as a defensive savant, and I do think he probably was the best defensive coordinator in football this year. Maybe Steve Spagnuolo in Kansas City could make a claim as well. But, you know, a guy that is so creative. He rotates his coverage to confuse quarterbacks. They send these exotic blitz packages and, you know, sim pressures, do all these things to create chaos. And when you're beating, soundly beating, you know, really good teams, Seattle, Detroit, obviously San Fran, like he wasn't just beating up on the bad teams. They were dominating the best offenses in the NFL. And I like the Ravens' talent on defense. It's not on paper an elite unit in terms of just pure talent on the field. And I know that maybe sounds crazy to some people, but like their starting edge rushers and Jadeveon Clowney and Kyle Van Noy signed 1-year flyers in August. Yeah. Like, and they had career years. So I think he's a great hire. I do wonder who fills out his staff. He was at Michigan for a while. You know, there's the Harbaugh connection between Jim and John. Comes back to Baltimore where he started. Just, it's always the big question, all right, who's his offensive staff going to be? So I'd go with him. And then also Jim Harbaugh, you know, just to thread the needle there. The Chargers needed to just step up, take a big swing, get a difference maker, a culture changer for that building in Jim Harbaugh. I know there's some cliches and buzzwords there, but the Chargers, you know, they try to be cheap at head coach. I'm not saying Brandon Staley wasn't a good candidate. Obviously didn't go too well, but they generally spend near the bottom of the market. They're now probably paying Jim Harbaugh top five money, and they're just done messing around. They're just trying to say, look, we have Justin Herbert. We failed Phillip Rivers, got him no accolades. We're not going to make that same mistake. And then, yeah, lastly, I think it is fascinating with Washington still open that Bobby Slowick in Houston and more so Ben Johnson in Detroit took their hats out of the ring. It really, we'll see what happens with the hire, but you don't get many more attractive head coach openings. And again, I know that sounds crazy talking about the Washington Commanders, but new ownership, ton of money, wants to be aggressive, wants to win, owns the Sixers. So you see a track record of, you know, trying different things, hiring a lot of smart people, spending money. They have the second overall pick and four other top 100 draft picks. They have the most cap space in the entire NFL right now. And they're going to be the last team to make a hire after firing Ron Rivera, you know, right after the season ended. So long-winded answer there, but it is fascinating that Ben Johnson didn't take a job. I think he loves Detroit, loves Jared Goff, and truly wants to, you know, bring a ring to Detroit.
Yeah, and we should see. I mean, I would imagine that Washington's going to make a decision pretty quick here, but now it's just them left. They could really take their time. They're going to have the pick of the litter of what's left, and we'll see how that works out. Then we'll have Super Bowl, and then all eyes are going to start to shift towards free agency. And inevitably, the quarterbacks, they're going to get the most love, of course. And we have one free agent quarterback who definitely stands out from the pack this year. That's Kirk Cousins. And he's got a pretty good thing going with the Vikings. You know, they've added some weapons there the last couple of years. It's a really strong set of pass catchers. But it feels like there's at least a chance that he could leave this offseason. So, Brad, give us your thoughts on Cousins and whether you'd like to see him back in Minnesota or actually testing the market and maybe signing somewhere else.
Yeah, so Minnesota, you make the decision to not extend Kirk Cousins going into this year. And you know, Kirk Cousins was tagged twice by Washington back in the day. Therefore, a third tag for him would be this astronomical number. We'll probably never see a third franchise tag happen. So you kind of know, going into the year and not extending him, as they've done twice since the initial signing, that you're open to the idea of him leaving in free agency. And then, as good as he's been, as much as I know Kevin O'Connell loves working with him, he's going to be 36 years old, coming off a torn Achilles. And the Vikings, you know, they have Danielle Hunter on defense as a pending free agent. They got to give Justin Jefferson the biggest contract at the position this offseason. I just feel like they towed the line of the competitive rebuild, all those cliches we hear. I think they did a good job, right? You win 13 games, go to the playoffs. Obviously, you know, lose to the Giants, not great. But, and then this year, I think they probably would have snuck in as an NFC wild card if Kirk did stay healthy. They were finally riding the ship. I just think you have to finally make your move. They're sitting at the 11th overall pick. It's a great quarterback class. You know, I don't love that second tier of guys. I think that's where you're going to get like your J.J. McCarthy's, maybe a Bo Nix in that type of range. I'm not saying I'm in love with those prospects. I think the top three is the top three for a reason. But I just think that there's a clean exit. And you got to just pivot to the future, get cheap at the position, spend more on defense, you know, and just build out an ecosystem where a young quarterback can step in and you can actually have sustained success. And so that's how I view it from their perspective. I'm sure Kirk would love to stay if that comes up. But I also know he's probably just like back in 2018. You know, he went to the Jets facility, went to Minnesota, got that fully guaranteed contract. I think the teams to watch are the Atlanta Falcons, you know, with new head coach Raheem Morris, brings over Zach Robinson from the Rams, historically have run, you know, kind of under center play action, outside zone scheme, just like Cousins has been doing with Kevin O'Connell, obviously the connection there. And then the Pittsburgh Steelers are interesting to me now. They've said they're going to bring in competition. You know, maybe they just kind of, you know, put a Band-Aid type of move for Kenny Pickett. But you hire Arthur Smith, who philosophically and schematically is legitimately a polar opposite of what Pittsburgh did last year. And I know their offense wasn't good last year, but still, you're drafting players, you're building an offense around inside zone, gap scheme, shotgun offense, and Arthur Smith does none of those things. So they're interesting to me as well after the hiring that came through yesterday.
All right, and then after Cousins, there's a bunch of journeyman veterans on the free agent quarterback market. I mean, guys like Baker Mayfield, who's coming off a pretty solid year. You know, he's got some good weapons around him in Tampa if he sticks around there. Gardner Minshew, who just started most of the year in relief duty after Anthony Richardson went down for the Colts. Jacoby Brissett, who was pretty solid as a fill-in starter for the Browns in 2022 before Deshaun Watson returned, and then he spent this year as a backup for most of the season in Washington. Joe Flacco, we know that story, the miraculous run he had with Cleveland late that season, and you know, then he turned into a pumpkin in the playoffs. But you know, there's more too. There's Ryan Tannehill and Jameis Winston and Josh Dobbs and even Carson Wentz. I mean, a bunch of guys with starting experience, but we've also seen some of these journeyman types kind of come out of nowhere and emerge as decent starters in recent seasons, like Mayfield in Tampa this year or Geno Smith with the Seahawks over the last couple of years. So is there one of these second tier free agent quarterbacks who you think could actually become maybe a sneaky starter in 2024? Or should we be careful? I know whenever anyone's like, who's the next Puka Nacua? Who's the next this guy or that guy? I always tell people, you got to be careful because you can't just chase those results automatically. But is there somebody in this group that you think could emerge as that that kind of guy next season.
Yeah, so one quick one is just, we mentioned Arthur Smith in Pittsburgh. I mean, Ryan Tannehill, but that would be more as a bridge. I think he probably would start in week one, per se, but you know, then they may be drafting a quarterback in the later rounds. There are a ton of prospects that'll probably go second, third round. You know, Michael Penix, Michael Pratt at Tulane, Spencer Rattler of South Carolina. Like, maybe they do make a hard pivot away from Kenny Pickett. But the one for me that I think still honestly deserves the opportunity to start, you know, and again, we know who we're talking about here, but Jacoby Brissett was very good in Cleveland. He had 11 games to start there. They had injuries, not of the same magnitude as this year, but they did deal with some issues there, and he made a lot of plays. He is not the mobile per se, but has good pocket manipulation. I think you've seen him grow in that aspect a lot, and then also grow as a guy that can attack all depths of the field and the middle of the field very well. I think him and Kevin Stefanski were a good match. He comes in Washington this year. You know, Sam Howell gets hurt in week 15. He goes 8 of 10 for 125 yards and two touchdowns. And then unfortunately gets hurt early in the next game. Like we said, we're not saying these guys are going to be franchise starters for 10 years, but there aren't a ton of openings. But if I was a team that was like, you know what, I just mentioned kind of the J.J. McCarthy type prospect. Let's say like you're the Raiders, right? We want to draft a guy, but we don't want to start him in week one. Go sign Jacoby Brissett, give him runway, give him a season or maybe 8 games, 10 games, see what you have there. He'd be my pick for that one.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing for, you know, super flex leagues, maybe not somebody that you're planning on using for a long time, but somebody that you can get some value out of early next season if they get those starts. So I like those calls there. Now, I've been going over the rookie class the last few weeks. I feel pretty confident saying this is going to be a weaker year for the rookie running backs, and hopefully Jonathan Brooks can get healthy coming off the ACL tear, because to me it seemed like he was the clear best back in this class from what I've seen so far. But overall, not as much high-end running back talent in this year's crop than maybe we've seen in some recent seasons, and that coincides with just an incredible group of veteran running backs who are free agents this year, right? Saquon Barkley and Josh Jacobs, Derrick Henry, Austin Eckler. There's a ton of names up at the top there, and those are just the guys up at the top. You could go even deeper, and we'll talk about some in a second here, but because that rookie class isn't as strong this season, do you think that we could see maybe some better deals for some of these free agent running backs? Because it's been such a struggle for these guys, you know, trying to get what they deserve on the free agent market. And we often see a lot of the older backs, they stay out there on the free agent market for a while before they end up signing. Do you think it's going to be any different this year? And maybe could it be because we're not going to see as many rookies coming in that could make an impact right away?
It's a great question, because you do see that trade-off where there's a lot of draft talent at a certain position. It'll maybe impact negatively the free agent market. And of course, the inverse, if there's not a lot of talent there and teams know they cannot address that position with earnest in the draft, maybe they'll overspend a little bit to get a free agent. So that certainly seems to be the consensus. It is not a great running back class by anyone's, you know, kind of forecasting of what we're going to see in April. So you'd think so. I do, at the same time, a little bit of kind of pause, because there are so many good running back options, right? So you have top of market guys like a Barkley and a Jacobs, a notch below with like a Derrick Henry, you know, Tony Pollard, Austin Eckler, maybe below that, but still, you know, a tier two guy. And then you still have like your DeAndre Swifts, your Zach Mosses, your Devin Singletary. So I think maybe, because I do think we are reaching an inflection point to a degree where if I'm a team and the market, the downward adjustment of the running back market has been so stark, and we've seen it for about 5 years in a row now, there might come a time where, hey, we could use the second round pick on a running back, or we could pay a Saquon Barkley like $10, $11 million a year in free agency, which of course is still a big deal. It would be top, you know, top five in the market at the position. But maybe we're reaching a point where there's now actually some value. I remember saying that last year. It may have been on this show about a guy like David Montgomery and James Conner. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. I'm sure I said it about, you know, other mid-tier guys. But saying like those guys probably in a vacuum were worth a little bit more than that. But just because the position is so weak, it's actually good value. And of course, Conner when healthy was great. And Montgomery is a good 1-2 punch in Detroit. So maybe, but it's still, none of these guys are going to top the market. They're not going to get Jonathan Taylor money. But yeah, I think they could get maybe a better deal than some people expect.
And the copycat league thing too, right? You see guys this year, and you mentioned some of them, like Singletary, like Zach Moss, these guys that kind of stepped in and played pretty well for however long they were starting, right? Maybe some other teams see that and they decide to go that route as well. If we look at like that second tier or third tier, or however you want to break it down, some of those names or even a little bit further down than that, is there a guy that you think could make a really big impact from that lower group potentially at running back?
I know he's probably on everyone's like hate list now going into 2024 because he was a letdown in 2023, you know, compared to his ADP, but it would still be Tony Pollard for me. You'd imagine maybe there is some positive touchdown regression. You know, what was the stat? Like 17 carries from the 5 yards and in or 10 yards and in and had three touchdowns. And so you probably won't get that same volume again. I think teams will watch that. They'll say, yeah, he's not a goal line back. And maybe he'll get some of those touches, but not as many. He could have half as many touches and score more touchdowns, you know, in the same scenario with some positive regression. So you maybe get that. You still are going to get pass catching ability from him and maybe a 1-2 punch role like before. With Ezekiel Elliott actually, you know, accentuates all the positives, keeps him fresh. You get back to a higher explosive play rate, eliminate some of those negatives and things like that. So I think he's kind of like an interesting buy low because he was, you know, some people said he's one of the biggest disappointments in a very long time, excluding injuries. And I see it. I get the argument, no question about it. Like the quietest 1,000-yard season in a while. But I think a bounce back for him could be interesting depending where he lands.
All right, we'll keep going here to receivers. And I remember we had you on last year. It was a pretty boring receiver crop, right? There wasn't much to talk about. It was like Jacoby Myers and Juju Smith-Schuster. I think those were like the top names. This year, got a ton of talent available up top, right? And really, the only question is going to be who's going to hit the market and who's actually going to get signed or tagged and end up sticking with their current team. And I know, unlike last year, you have all these wideouts near the top in your top 150, right? You have five, I think, in the top 25 from what I saw. T. Higgins, Michael Pittman Jr., Mike Evans, Calvin Ridley, Marquise Brown, and maybe it won't be as exciting come March, right? Some of them could stay with those current teams, like I said, but of those five, who do you think has the best chance to end up on another team this offseason?
Yeah, so this is the key, right, is the franchise tags always ruin, you know, all our forecasting ahead and getting excited about potential different fits. I'll say first, at the top, T. Higgins is not going to get let go in free agency, but I do think there is an outside shot that we get a tag and trade there. He's going to get tagged 100%. The same agent represented Jesse Bates. We all saw how that went. And again, Cincinnati might just say, we don't care. We're just going to tag him and let him play it out. And that's our prerogative. But maybe they force the issue enough and force a trade there. So a team would have to make a trade for him, probably a first-round pick, I think in the range of an A.J. Brown-type deal. The other three are Michael Pittman will be a Colt. I'd be shocked if he's not. But the next three, so Mike Evans, everyone always says, and it's totally true, he's a Tampa guy all the way through. He was offering to take a pay cut at the end of the Brady run. And he may have had a couple too many tequila shots on the party boat, but he did say that. And so, like, I get the argument of he never wants to leave, but last offseason, he drove a pretty hard bargain trying to get an early extension. His agent came out and said he was frustrated and upset they couldn't find a deal. I think he might, you know, be open to the idea of going elsewhere. Does he chase a ring with like a, I don't know, Aaron Rodgers, New York Jets or something like that? Does he go for the biggest payday? Maybe reunite in Carolina with Dave Canales, who was the Bucs offensive coordinator, who's now the Panthers head coach. So there's some interesting angles there for him. And then Marquise Brown and Calvin Ridley. So Ridley is fascinating because you would have thought a tag is very possible, but the general manager, Trent Baalke, basically came out last week and said, if we have to tag Josh Allen, who's their star edge rusher, then that's what we'll do. And look, if the choice is between the two of them, it's not even a question. They would tag Josh Allen and take the risk with Calvin Ridley. So I know we had a down year a little bit. It's a crazy high target share. Only hauled in about 57% of his passes, but the drops came down the second half of the season. I think you still saw a smooth route runner with good footwork that can create separation. I think he'd be a really fun addition. And then Marquise Brown, I know he's close with Kyler Murray, but has missed time the last 2 years now. Maybe Arizona wants to go a different direction. They're obviously picking fourth overall. I think everyone expects them to take Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers out of LSU. But, you know, if not, I think Brown's kind of perception is also maybe a little bit, like, skewed too far in the negative. When I watch him play, he still can create separation, good burst off the line. Obviously got to scheme some free releases up and stuff for him because of his size, but he's a good football player still, and I think would be an asset to a lot of offenses.
And then similar to what I asked you about running backs, if we go a little further down the list and some of the names there, like Curtis Samuel or Gabe Davis, DJ Chark, Odell Beckham, Darnell Mooney, Tyler Boyd. Those are kind of some of the ones that stand out to me. You can feel free to go even further if you want here, but if you had to place a chip on one of those free agent wide receivers, one of the guys that are from kind of the second or third tier, however far down you want to go, who's somebody there that you think could surprise people next season?
Yeah, I'll go with two here. So Darnell Mooney's the one for me. Undoubtedly did not have a good year. And not just because the Bears, you know, can't throw the football very effectively. Since he joined the NFL, the Bears have the fewest passing yards in the entire league, and he still put up 1,000 yards as a second-year player with Andy Dalton and Justin Fields splitting time as the quarterback. So, look, he had a down year. He was working through an ankle injury from last year and then got dinged up again, and the film wasn't great. Like, I won't lie to you. It didn't look very good, in particular at the catch point, just not very good on contested catches. But we've seen this guy produce. We've seen him make intermediate and deep catches in traffic, over defenders. We've seen him separate at a very, very high level. He's a good route runner, has good speed, not great speed, but is a fast player. And it was a throwaway year. It was a burn the tape and never think about it again 2023 for Darnell Mooney. But you put him on an offense that can, you know, bring out the positives in him, inside-outside ability, good separator. You know, the pipe dream for me is a Kansas City where he reunites with Matt Nagy, who is, of course, the Bears head coach, is now the Chiefs offensive coordinator, and he is a Chiefs receiver. Like he is that prototypical, they love separation, you know, ability to make guys miss in space, all the things that he does very, very well when healthy. He's one. And then Curtis Samuel. I think Curtis Samuel still, to me, just has a fascinating skill set, a guy that he's not Deebo Samuel, but he can carry the football, give him 4 or 5 carries in a game. Did it a lot at Ohio State, did it a lot early on in Washington. He can also be a deep threat in Carolina. He had like a 17-yard average depth of target for a couple seasons. So he just can do it all. I think had a good season in Washington, was productive. Like you said earlier in the show, you know, Terry McLaurin and Jahan Dotson weren't. He was, you know, more productive than those guys for basically the second half of the season. So diverse skill set, still only 27, looking for a third contract. I think Curtis Samuel is an interesting piece.
I love those two calls, and they're both guys that I have on a bunch of dynasty teams where, you know, you're making trade offers and stuff, and you're thinking about adding their name to the trade, and you think about it, and then you go, no, I got to hang on. I still believe, and I've been holding them for a couple seasons, so I'm hoping that we're going to actually get something from those guys, and I really like that you brought them up. Last one here, we got to mention tight ends, and there's a few intriguing ones heading to free agency. Dalton Schultz, Hunter Henry, Noah Fant, who I still feel like Noah Fant has something there if he could land in the right spot. Gerald Everett, who could you see actually have their stock rise the most if they end up with the right new club?
Yeah, Fant is an easy answer for me there. I like Gerald Everett, but just older player, and I also just played in the Chargers offense, so which really had no tight end talent besides him. Noah Fant, it's interesting, you know, splitting time with Will Disley and Colby Parkinson in Seattle, but still, you see flashes of the athlete that made him a 20th overall pick out of Iowa, yeah. You know, that catch and run from Drew Locke in that game, where he ran for 50 yards and almost scored, like, not super consistent, but good in the open space, can make players miss, you know, shifty for a tight end at least. And yeah, I just wonder why the volume isn't there from a snap share perspective, and of course, you know, a target share on top of that, but he's just a guy that, just like you said about those receivers, I refuse to quit on Noah Fant. I still feel like he'd be a, you know, later breakout tight end. And I don't think it's just because of the draft capital, although, you know, I'm sure it sticks in all of our minds. But you just see flashes here and there when you watch the film and you watch the games. I feel like he goes somewhere and is that classic, like, you know, almost like an Evan Engram leaves New York and then is, you know, fourth in the NFL and catches this year. I just think Noah Fant has more untapped potential.
All right. I agree with you there. And that is all for today's show. So make sure you're checking out Brad's content over at PFF. And once again, man, it's the second year that we've had you on. I really love your approach. I love how professional you are. I love how deep you're going with this stuff. It's always great talking to you. So appreciate you jumping on and talking through all this with us.
Really appreciate that. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
And we'll definitely have you back again. Maybe we'll bring you back after free agency and we can actually talk about what happens with some of these signings when we know where these guys land. As for me, I'm going to be working on the updated 2024 rankings and the updated Dynasty Trade Value Charts. Those will be coming out probably over the next couple days, definitely before Super Bowl, though. It just kind of depends how much time I need to put into it and when I feel actually good about them before I can publish them. So they'll be out soon in the next week or so. And I'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, big thanks again to Brad. Big thanks to everybody out there for listening. And we will see you next time.
Said leave on time, my baby. Said leave on time. Leave on time with me tonight. Said leave on time.